Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. All right, so today it's just me and Max.
Hey.
And we're going to dive into some GM stuff and come up with some homework topics for artifacts, monsters, rituals, that kind of thing, and dip our toe into step five a little bit while we're at it. So, starting with GM stuff, Max, you ran Gloomtown, and what was the biggest pain point for you?
Definitely combat.
Mm-hmm. Was it the running of combat or the planning?
Planning it, designing it, because I know that's like, for a lot of people, that's where the fun comes in.
Yeah.
It's combat. They finally get to use their powers. Like, we have a lot of powers that don't involve combat, but the bulk of the fun of an RPG game is that combat
for some people. For a lot of people, yeah.
So, like, not wanting to disappoint, kind of not really know what I was doing, and not seeing how it scales. So, like, that first combat was really, really unsure of what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, putting together a team, like, do I put in 4 guys who are really strong? Do I put in 10 guys who aren't so strong? Just seeing how it would actually work out for me.
Just having some sort of guideline would have helped. The only guideline I think I made was that chart of just showing chance to hit percentages, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's really the only thing we've done. And I was trying to think of, I don't even know how to frame it for the GM. There are two ways to do it, right? There's the way to make your ideas that every combat should be a specific challenge, you know, unique, because you're trying to do something and challenge your group in a different way every time. Or the world is what it is, and sometimes you pick a fight with a hobo, and it's just a hobo.
Yeah. Like, a lot of my guys were just that. Like, I was staying with my story.
Mm-hmm.
These were just townsfolk who happened to be holding weapons.
Right.
You know, they didn't have magic flame pillars and everything like that. So using enough of those to make it still fun and challenging, but sticking with my story.
So, you know, you got the hang of it towards the end.
Yeah.
Especially like the final episode, it felt like you were able to get creative, you know, and make some new things.
I feel like the first one was the most nerve-wracking one of like seeing how everything's going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it went well. And that gave me better for the second and the third to go on to see how they work out.
Here's something we're going to run into too, is that an easy fix, I think, is just to create example encounters. You know what I mean? Say, this is a level one, this is a difficult encounter. Or this one's a boss encounter. Just do that. Now, the problem is with the dice tier system and with the unique ways that people can level up, how do we increase the difficulty in those examples consistently? Do we say, add 2 to everything? You know, or do we just say, maybe create one for every 5 levels, like another example, and you can kind of fill in the blanks yourself? Because eventually we're going to have to create some kind of monster manual or generator, you know, so that people can get, you know, if somebody runs off the map and says, what's here? The GM could just be like, this thing.
Yeah.
And I found it, at least in our system, I found it easier to design boss encounters than just random mobs. Because the boss encounter, I'm like, okay, well, generally they're going to do this much damage around. So if I want it to last this many rounds, it just has this much health.
Yeah.
And then it'll act 3 times a turn, and that which means it'll do roughly this amount of damage around. When you have 4, 5, 6, and you got to design it so that they're dangerous when they start, but then when they start picking them off one by one, is it still difficult at all? Like, how much do you ramp them up, ramp them down?
Yeah, that was my real issue with the first time was like, let's see what these guys actually do, because what are they putting out? What is the team going to put out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it depends on the dice roll. There's been games where we whiff all night.
Oh, yeah.
So a mob that's not designed to be super dangerous, that's not whiffing, could be dangerous, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the, you know what, now the more I think about it, I had a much easier time overall every time I made a boss encounter. So the time you guys fought the caretaker in Echoes, where he had the lasers and he was stepping over stuff, that was easy. The mole was easy. And even Calavon at the end, where I had to give him like crazy powers and he created like golems and stuff, it was still all centered on him and what he does every round. Until he's done, he's pretty much exactly as dangerous as when the encounter started. You know, you could kill the golems, but they're coming back.
Yeah,
it would be fun to do like a boss rush mode where you just go boss after boss after boss. But how do we deal with difficulties of mobs? I mean, there's obviously like phases of an encounter, right? So you mm-hmm. can make it so that when this guy dies, now this extra thing happens, you know, whichever one you kill first.
Yeah.
So like almost like a Dark Souls.
I think you did that well with like, you've done this, now this happens mm-hmm. and everything. So that was, you know, having that and seeing Liam do it as well
mm-hmm.
helped me just seeing in front of me.
That's really, I do think now that then the main question becomes, because I think we can all get creative with bosses mm-hmm. pretty easily, but how do we get it down to you're attacked by 15 creatures?
Yeah.
Because each of them has to be dangerous enough that even when it's down to one, they could do some damage. You know, they could still threaten your party.
I think Liam did that well with the powers.
Yeah.
We're attacked by the powers.
I agree.
Yeah.
But each one had to be much more complicated individually than mm-hmm. your basic town guard, you know, which you wouldn't expect a town guard to be anything mm-hmm. more than a sword. So maybe, would you feel like if there was just like, I don't know, like a 3x5 card that's like basic town guard enemy, you know what I mean? And then you're like, oh, I'm putting five of those in.
Absolutely.
So just like a monster manual, basically.
What if we did like a deck, you know?
And yeah, we could do that.
People could just randomly
shuffle.
Yeah.
Like you got two dragons this time. Yeah, you could do that.
You know, you could pull those out like a Joker. That would be super helpful if we just, even not to put it down on the table, just to have for you to like, as a skeleton, to design what mm-hmm. you want. Because you could take that basic town guard and do what you wanted with them.
Yeah, because
that at least gives you the...
You would just say like strength 2, dex 3.
Yeah.
You know, int 0. Composure 1, endurance 0. And then you would say it, you know, it gets +3 to hit, it does a d6 +2 of damage. And that's it. Like that's his entire
that's all you need.
Armor of 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And just having that, you could use that to flesh out whatever you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But for a new GM like I was, that would be super helpful.
Because you would just see that and go, okay, 5 of those.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean this sounds very basic. I'm sure listeners who are you know, have GM before, obviously this seems very obvious, but it's not
for a first time GM like I was. It's just like staring into the abyss, not really knowing. Like I've played before and I've seen good GMs do their thing, but being on that end, it's totally different.
And the problem I've had in going to a monster manual when I'm looking for encounters to run is that they'll list out the difficulty of encounter, but the monsters are so specific and their abilities are so specific that I need to reskin everything. And that takes a lot of time. If we just have generic monsters, like that one would be, instead of town guard, it would just be thug, you know, and it could be a thug of any kind. You know, you put your own skin on it. Maybe that's a good way to start off. Yeah. Just
level 0 thug. And then you could, with our dice tier.
Yeah.
Okay. Easy. I want a level 4 thug. Boom.
Yeah, and I don't think the GM should be worrying about the dice tier of enemies, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think players should worry about the dice tier. The GM should get, if you want to increase the difficulty of him, you should be able to add +1 to these stats.
To anything, yeah.
Yeah, but like, so his damage instead of, you know, like maybe a level 1 instead of level 0, it's a +4 to hit and a 1d6 +3. So everything just goes up by 1 and his health increases by 5. You know, just something. I don't know that those are the numbers,
mm-hmm.
but the GM not having to worry about the dice tier system makes it easier on the GM. But the players relying on the dice tier system makes it easier for the GM to balance an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
There is an argument that asymmetric gameplay makes everything more complicated. I'm not seeing it on my end, in this one.
Yeah, but having that deck of cards in would be mm-hmm. super great. Cause,
like thug,
yeah.
Small animal. Magical animal, and you could say magical attack does this much damage.
I'm good on the creative end. I could take that deck of cards, shuffle it, and mm-hmm. come up with a campaign or encounter just based on like 5 random cards I'm seeing in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's the numbers and everything, putting that together, which is the hard part.
So how do you balance around unequal levels of your party? So do you do it by the total amount of momentum? Because the amount of momentum somebody has increases their efficacy. Mm-hmm. You could say if everybody's level 4 except for two of them, one's level 5, one's level 2, right? But the level 2 guy has 90 momentum saved. You can just count that as he's level 5.
Yeah.
You know, for your average level, then how much you could level up if you spent it. So like divide your momentum divided by 30. That'd be a good metric. Like what level could you get to if you spent all your momentum? Okay, now that's the average level of the group.
I like that.
All right.
It's a very basic numbers based.
I think it'll pan out to be relatively mm-hmm. well, here's the problem though. I think that as people level up, their power doesn't increase linearly, right? So they, especially, you know, if you're thinking death and they start getting all these creatures and stuff like that, it's not a linear scale. They start going up exponentially. So we'll have to come up with some kind of formula for that and we'll see if it works.
Yeah, because I can see, like, you don't want everything based off that level 2.
Right.
But you also don't want level 6 because a level 2 is going to get real frustrated.
Yeah, so let's say a level 2 fighting a guy who does a d6 plus 5 in damage, then you're like, okay, well, add 3 levels and he's dealing with level 5 death. And it's like, okay, well, then he does a d6 plus 8. And it's like, no, death's going to walk all over him mm-hmm. at that. You know, it's not even close. So there needs to be some kind of way to... So the dice tier system helps because it increases the damage of everything you already have. But the new abilities you're getting ramp it up another step. We'll have to find a way to balance around that. And we'll see how... I guess what I can do is create a spreadsheet of what the average damage of the damage dealers... Because like Citadel will never outpace... You know, except for mm-hmm. specific circumstances where you can get off as many opportunity attacks as possible, Citadel will never outpace a pure damage path. So what is the average you could do at this level if everything hit and you had everything out that you could do over 5 rounds, let's say? And then the difference between what it is at each one of those levels should inform how much it ramps up for the GM for each, you know, mm-hmm. monster.
And we're also free, open to do whatever.
Yeah.
Do whatever the hell you want.
It's true.
If you look at a formula and just say no, that's fine.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into step 5 a little bit. We've already done Scoundrel, Citadel, and Radiance. What we've got left is Death, Zealotry, Command, Marksman, Ice, Fire, and Champion. So we've got quite a lot.
Yeah.
But we have some ideas for each of these. And I think for Marksman, we talked about moving Suppressive Fire to step 5 now. And it's a feature where if you hit with 2 ranged attacks, all enemies within your line of sight... move at half speed until the start of your next turn.
That's very useful.
Yeah, but it also fulfills the function of Suppressive Fire, right?
Yeah.
Like the actual
what way it's Suppressive supposed to work. Fire would be, yeah.
Yeah, but it's all enemies within your line of sight, I think is fair.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, just shooting 5 arrows at the ground.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't really stop what we're going for.
No, and that's like a volley is yeah. the idea. So how about an at will? And I think if we give them Suppressive Fire, they don't need a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's really already... That's really powerful.
Oh, man. If you had like 3 marksmen and 2 of them held their action till your turn.
To do what?
Chain them together.
Oh, Suppressive Fire?
Something like that, mm-hmm. where you would actually have to have more than one archer to do Suppressive Fire.
I like that. That's, yeah. Well, does it count if it's, I don't know, I think it has to be from the same archer. Because it has to be a single threatened source.
Some kind of Voltron-ass like move where mm-hmm. you have all 3 archers just holding and then... letting off at the same time.
That could be cool. I'm just trying to think, like, if you've got, you know, a long shot archer and a...
Yeah, the combat, the medium.
It's a skirmish or what we call it. And an assault archer. If that assault archer's in the middle and shooting up the mix, it's not going to suppress... That person has no has very little suppressive effect compared to the long shot one that's just landing them from far away. Well, what's an at-will attack that you would do as a marksman that both would like... So we've already got some good ones for them. They've already got Rapid Fire and Impossible Shot. And they have From the Hip and Punch Through.
Mm-hmm.
They can already pin people. And they've got arrows that give secondary effects when they hit.
Do we want one for long range, one for close up? Or?
I don't think so. I think at this point now there's enough differentiation to where you would use the... Whatever your loadout is would make the ability customized already, you know? Maybe something like Distracting Shot?
That's good. How would we...
If it hits, it deals low damage, but the enemy takes a -4 to hit. Maybe their dodge goes down by 2, and they get -4 to hit.
That's great. That would be very useful.
Mm-hmm. Or do we do maybe just -2 to both?
Yeah.
Right? Because it'd be worth it, depending on mm-hmm. what's going on. Because you got some guy hitting you from long range as well. You know, you would be like, all right, well, I'm going to tag him. Just hopefully he'll miss. And when the champion can get to it, it'll be less likely to dodge.
That's great.
All right. That's easy enough. Yeah, I mean, either one would use that.
Either
right?
one, yeah.
Does it also grant the upper hand?
Is this an at will?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's pretty powerful then if we do that.
Yeah.
I think just distracting shot, because they're just a little, just the negative twos, I think,
mm-hmm.
is probably enough. But because dodge and hit don't scale in our game at the same rate.
If you could have the upper hand every round, that might be.
It'd be brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to do everything in your power to try to get the upper hand every round, but
just having it given to you would be.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's, if you were in the background, you could just do that.
Yeah. Because, well, think about it this way too. You can say, let's say you're long shot, right? And you go, okay, well now I'm going to affix a heavy broadhead to it. So it'll do more damage, right? I'm going to spend my move action to gain +2 to this attack. And I'm going to do it from double the distance of anybody else, and then they get -2, -2. Like, you don't really feel like you're sacrificing a lot to get that shot off.
Yeah, you're helping out your team.
Okay, I like it. I think that's enough for them, because at 4, they really blew up with the versatile quiver and catch a breather. So let's do that. Let's do distracting shot, -2, -2, and it deals... What's heavy broadhead do? 2 tiers up? Let's do 4 tiers lower.
That works.
Okay. Weapon -4 tiers. They get -2, -2, and it's till the end of your next turn. So you get the benefit of it, of their reduced dodge on your next shot. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
God, I love marksmen. The assault marksman is just going to be...
Oh, it's going to be gross. I'm favoring long shot myself, but I like that they both seem useful. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because if you do distracting shot and then rapid fire next, you get the... Their dodge is lower for both those shots.
Rapid fire was just a solid mm-hmm. move every time. Just give up that in bonus and go.
Oh, and I think we created Sunbeam for Radiance, and it was just a damage thing. I think we can let it heal, because it's single target. They have no single target heal. So I think we give this to them. It's a big hit, either as a heal or damage.
Okay.
I feel like that's fine.
Yeah.
That doesn't really cause any problems. Roy G. Blitz doesn't heal anybody. We'll keep that name for as long as we can. So, Zealotry step 4, we gave them an at will, but we also gave them a daily and a per scene. The daily is an attack. It grants them an extra attack action on their next attack. The per scene is called Persistence, and it's a swift action, and it extends the effect of a Bane or a Boon on the target by an additional round. I think that's okay, but now we've changed it to be stances. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's not really... that useful, except for, so I think what we can do is change persistence to be an at will move action. So if you want to extend the effect of a bane or a boon, you have to spend a move action to do it, but you can do it whenever you want to. And then their daily is very powerful. Just, you make a basic attack, and on your next attack action you get an extra one. That's real powerful.
Yeah.
And then we put down Nova Strike as an at will attack. I think we make that step 5. It's your next attack damages enemies and heals allies in burst 1 for a lot. So it that's pretty good. I think if we're giving everybody a per scene to use now, I think we give them a bane to put on enemies.
Do they have any banes for before in their steps?
Yeah, let me pull it up here.
Yeah.
They only really have Aspect of Fear and, let's see, Exploit Cowardice until... the end of your turn, you and all allies within 10 gain the upper hand. That's all boons. These are all boons. So we should start laying down some banes.
Can we, you know, Warding Strike, make sure you don't attack anybody but you?
Mm-hmm.
Could we have one where they just don't want to attack you at all?
We have that for Radiance.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got that so that enemies have to pass a composure check to even be able to attack you.
Okay.
You know what would be fun is something like Ghost Rider, that penance stare, you know, where it makes them relive, like... bad stuff.
Oh God!
What's like an evil eye or something? You know, yeah. Like where you give them a look and it causes them a bane. Maybe like, for 2 rounds,
they relive their worst memory.
Uh huh. And you could use persistence to keep it up on them.
If you could like project, you know, like their children or something. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
So what's a good one? Maybe because there's the paranoid condition. Let's look up some conditions here.
Spiritual concussion.
All right, here we go. Blurry vision, shortness of breath, pulled muscle, paranoia, and shaken.
I think shaken.
How about paranoia and shaken? They cannot benefit from ally boons, cannot be granted attacks or movement from allies. They cannot make opportunity attacks, and they get -4 to skill checks.
Just staring into the eyes of like a fucking cobra. Yeah.
Is that good enough, though? Because like blurry vision is -2 to melee attacks and dodge, and -3 to range attacks.
Make it a daily and say,
oh,
first round is blurry vision, second round is, if they don't get rid of it, second round is paranoia.
Yeah. How about like every round at the start of their turn, maybe it's like visions of death, and they have to roll to gain a condition. The condition is completely imaginary. Like, it's not really happening.
But in their brain.
Yeah. So they have to roll on the track.
Just psychosomatic conditions?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And if they're all, what if they're all just step one? Like, it never gets to step two, but it's like, if you roll mild concussion, they just have that again that turn. So they get a new condition every turn. Does the previous one go away? So, like, if you have it for two turns and you roll a concussion on the first one and you roll something else on the second one, are you no longer concussed?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so you just keep...
Because that would fuck with you.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, okay. So,
yeah.
And that's a per scene. I think it's
would
a spell.
Would they have to do something to make it go away? Like, would they have to stop, not move, not fight, or anything to make it
no, I think,
stop?
I think they, in the beginning of their turn, they roll a composure die. If they beat your composure defense, they don't gain the condition. They still have evil eye or whatever we're going to call it. They still have that effect on them, but they don't have to gain a condition that turn. The condition goes away for that turn, and then at the beginning of the turn, they do it again. And if they fail, they now roll a d6 and they have it for a full round. Yeah, so a full round is
that's just fun.
Okay, so we'll do two rounds. I think it's a magical attack, right? So you roll intelligence versus their composure defense. So you attack their composure defense. What's a cool name for that? Because like evil eye is fine, but and penance stare, that's fine. Those are all very appropriate. But this one, like you're gaining, you know, conditions and you feel like you're dying, and none of it's real is the important part. It's none of it's actually real, but the effects are real.
I know there's a name for it because that shit really happens, but
yeah,
like hypnosis, something.
Well, it's psychosomatic, right? Like that's the idea. Stare of the gaze of the hypochondriac, you know, something like that.
Stare of the puppeteer.
Yeah. You know what? I almost want to make it all step two instead of step ones, like the step two conditions instead of, or we'll call them stage two conditions instead of stage one, because you can just get none of them. You know, what was the name of the Black Moon again? But it's also like a graveyard was the idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I found it. Okay. Zerusha is her name, and we could call it Eye of Zerusha.
Like I was thinking like Zerusha's Window or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Eye of Zerusha, really, that does it. So you make one attack. If it misses, they don't get the... It fails. But if it lands every turn, on their first turn every round... No, on their next turn. Just for two rounds. For two rounds, they get this on at the beginning of their next turn... They roll, and at the same spot in that round, they roll. They have to roll again, and you can use persistence to extend the length that it goes by spending move action.
A stink eye that can give you a concussion.
Yeah,
like, you know,
that's fun. I like that one. You'll feel like you have a concussion for one round, and it'll affect you.
Yeah,
and then like pulled muscle. If you move further than a certain amount, you take damage. That's fun. I like that. Okay, so yeah, okay. So Nova Strike, Eye of Zerusha. I feel like that's good for Zealotry.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we've done zealotry and we've done marksman. How about ice? I've got two ideas for ice.
All right,
these are both not attacks, but they're secondary effects. One's at will, one's per scene. They're both utility, and swift actions. So I was thinking for you could imbue as a swift action any weapon that you touch, and then when it hits, it explodes with the damage. So, like, your an ally's weapon is imbued with frost, dealing an extra damage on hit and slowing the enemy until the start of the next turn. And then cold spot is once per scene, it's an immediate action whenever you choose to do it. One enemy that's slowed by you is immobilized until the end of your next turn. So, like, you slow a group of people and somebody goes to move, you can ramp up the cold on that guy just to stop him, you know, if he's going to run at your healer or something.
I really like the first one. The mm-hmm. second one's cool, but the first one is just touching somebody else's blade or something. Mm-hmm.
Or your
yeah.
own.
Yeah, that's great.
So what if we then... I like cold spot just because it's a simple... You can do it once per scene, and it's just... It could save someone's ass.
Oh, yeah.
But you wouldn't want that to be all of step five. But I think given those two, all we need to give them is one at-will attack now.
I just imagine ice standing behind, like, Citadel or Champion.
Mm-hmm. Their current at-will attacks... Well, the current attacks, right? They're, mm-hmm. they're two at-wills. Are Ray of Frost, which is just like Dazzling Ray, basically. But it just deals damage. It deals damage, and the closest creature hit is immobilized until the end of your next turn. I think I almost want to change that. I think that's too powerful to completely immobilize an enemy with an at will. I think they have to pass. You have to roll. If your attack roll beats their endurance defense as well, they get immobilized. That way, like...
That makes more sense.
If you're fighting a giant creature and it's an endurance of 12, you're not going to immobilize it, but it's still worth it for the damage. And the other one is Javelin of Ice, where it's a single target, does damage, and if you spend your move action, it does more damage.
Okay. What if we gave them the fireballs, you know, just balls of ice that can explode like a shotgun?
We could do that, but then we already have ice sculptures where create items and they could make a snowball in their hand, throw it, and it explodes. We could do a snowball where the further it travels, the more damage it does.
Oh.
That could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like it increases in tier.
Maybe every three.
I think that's almost too slow. So maybe it just starts off at for every space it travels, it has a range of 10. And for every space it travels, it gains one tier. That could be fun, right?
Yeah.
Like it starts at tier 0. Or maybe, should it start at a die 4? So we could make it a negative 5 tier, like to start. Mm-hmm. So just if you hit somebody in front of you, it does a die 4. And then what's tier 10? Pull it up.
Because if you really needed that die 4, you know, right in front of you, you just
do it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because you just use Javelin of Ice. Maybe it doesn't provoke.
There you go.
That way it's just not useful to throw it at somebody next to you. Yeah. You just kind of like flick it at them, and it's not going to provoke.
Then for step 6, you put a rock in the middle. Like the shitty kids.
That'd be fucked up.
Yeah.
And I think it slows the target. Because Javelin of Ice and Ray of Frost don't. I think whoever it hits, it slows them.
Just from getting hit in the face with a snowball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So tier 10 is 2d8. That's not enough, right? At level 5. Yeah. If you get your maximum damage off of that, that's not enough. So maybe if it's tier 1, so it'll be tier 6. Because you're going to add your level. Well, no, you're level 4 if you're at step 5. Minimum. So we say it's... Starts off as level 2. No, just say level 1. So it'll start as a d10, and it could grow to 2d8 plus 1d4. Is that enough?
For an at will?
And it slows them?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Well, let's look at Javelin of Ice.
Because the slowing is...
I think if you hit somebody at the full 10,
mm-hmm.
it should get...
If it doesn't provoke and it slows?
Yeah.
I think...
Well, let's... What is...
I think the damage is secondary.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
What if you hit him at a 10? It's so big, it hits a burst 1.
So only at 10, though, yeah.
Yeah, only at 10. It hits at a, it's a burst 1 at the full damage.
At that point, you're basically bowling. Like, if you're the first to go and they haven't gone yet, yeah.
I like that. Let me. Well, let's compare it to the other damage that they do, though. So right now...
Makes me want to run, like, a Three Stooges campaign.
So right now, Javelin of Ice is a 5. So it's only going to do tier 4. Okay, so Javelin of Ice, if you spend your move action, does class 7 damage. So we add 4 to that to be at step 5. And that would be... 7 plus 4 is what, 11? Yeah. Maybe it does, what did I say, tier 1? Mm-hmm. And then at 10, it becomes tier 10. Let's do tier 0 then. So it'll be even one step lower. Because you're going to try to get that blast at the end of that every time. You're going to move away from the enemies to get that 10 distance. Okay, I dig that. Doesn't provoke. Slows an enemy. If you hit him at the... it grows by 1 for every space away you are from the enemy. And if you get him at 10, it does a burst 1.
Yeah, you're not going to cast that at 8. You're going to you're gonna move back 2.
I think that's enough for ice.
Yeah.
I like that a lot, actually. They got good control. They've got tons of stuff. Ice is great. I don't think we've never had a problem with ice. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just slowing is...
Oh, yeah. Slowing is so useful. Great. And then you could use Cold Spot to stop them. Okay. So let's get into... I think that's enough for today on step 5. Let's get into the homework, right? So let's do... Yeah. I came up with an artifact and monster that are both linked.
Okay.
I was a little inspired by Pokemon, and I was thinking Compactimals. So it's a small metal sphere, about 3 inches in diameter, weighing about a kilogram or 2.2 pounds, and it unfolds like a flower to make a full-sized pet. Pet cannot fight, but it can perform special functions unique to the pet type it is. So, like, I think we use pets from our time, because that's what they would have been modeled after, but they think they're fictional animals like Pokemon, because they've never seen just, like, a dog before. They're like, what's this small Brookie? So there's a dog can track things. And, like, it acts like a dog, except for that. Cannot fight, will not defend you, but it will take simple commands like track. Cats can climb and sneak, and you could probably figure out creative ways to use them. A donkey can carry. A bird can fly and spot, and you could ride a horse. And then there's a fish, and it does nothing. At least you don't know why it was
you
made.
You have no idea. Yeah.
And there's 6 of them, so I figure if you find a compactimal sphere, you roll a d6 to see which one you get. And
that's awesome.
I think
because they would completely believe they're just completely fictional.
Yeah, they're like, what are these crazy sculptures of animals? Yeah. They're made clearly. This dog is made to look like a Brookie, you know.
Yeah,
but it's smaller. You know, they've never seen just a house cat before. It could be fun. It could be fun. You're like, you found a compactimal, and it's like, oh, what is it? It's fucking fish.
But then that one time when you're in the ocean.
Yeah, the fish. I just put nothing for the fish. Like, I think I imagine, like, even a goldfish. It's just a goldfish, just meant to look cool in your house. And the monster I came up with is a scarier compactimal. It will not follow commands, and it's like a dinosaur, a dragon, a bear, other like fictional creatures, things like that. They were intended for almost like a Pokemon Go villain, for like a raid boss that you'd go up against. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With whatever compactimal you had at the time, but
now it's just.
Yeah.
Out in the world.
It's almost like a mimic, right? You're like, oh, sweet, a treasure. And it's like, oh, it's a dragon. But I think the funny thing is maybe it always weighs 2.2 pounds. It's like you got this giant horse that you could pick up with one finger. I think that wouldn't be true for the dinosaurs or anything like that. Like, you go to pick it up and you're like, fuck, it's, you know, really heavy. Oh, we're screwed. Yeah.
Don't open it.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. That's really... So they would be able to function as a regular creature though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't feed them.
Yeah.
There's nothing to feed them, and they only know basic stuff. Like, they'll follow you around. You know, you could put like a little bag on the dog. It's like the size of a lab or something. But it's not going to do anything else. Like, if you're like, hey, you show it like a piece of cloth and you're like, track this, it is only as good as a dog would be at that, which is great.
Yeah.
Dogs are great at that, but it's not magical. It's not going to
It's not coming into combat with you. I had a monster. I'm trying to, like, in my mind, I'm trying to populate the world of, like, what people eat, what people do.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, last time I'd come up with that bird creature. This one, I came up with a morgue or morgix for more than one.
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of like a cow, like a smaller cow with, like, really wiry, bristly hair.
Okay.
But subhuman intelligence, to where they have a language that they communicate to each other. Not a human language, but
almost like a dumb whale.
Yeah, like that you can recognize they are speaking to each other, mm-hmm. but they're just, they taste so good that people eat them, even though they are, you know, recognizably intelligent.
Okay. That's interesting. I like that.
So kind of like a herd animal, kind of like deer, mm-hmm. like a very intelligent deer, boar species mm-hmm. that are just delicious.
Imagine if you had to negotiate with one and you're like, okay. I know it's reasonably intelligent. I don't speak its language, but I can start like showing it things. Yeah. Yeah, that could be fun.
Kind of like a moral system where like, yeah, you can communicate. Like they can understand you, not your language, but they know.
Well, like a chimpanzee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like if a chimpanzee was delicious.
But everyone, yeah. Like everyone knows they're super intelligent, but they're also just so good.
I like it. I do like that. Okay. Yeah.
Morgix if there's more than one.
Okay. Because that could be a fun.
Just like people know. If you're a farmer and you just have a field full of morgues, you're just like, what am I doing here?
You have to throw them little parties and stuff. Yeah. You cannot let them know they're about to be eaten. I listened to the Meat Eater podcast, and Steve Ranella was talking about when he went to Bolivia to hunt with the chimane, and they heard a howler monkey, and they got super stoked. And he's like, okay, great. Howler monkey? He's not into it. You know, and they kill it. And they shoot it with a bow. It falls out of the tree, and the guy to carry it home, puts it on his back like he's giving it a piggyback ride, and ties its hands and feet around to around his chest. And he wears it like a backpack. And he's like, and the whole time I'm looking at it, and I see, you know what? They're just too much like folks. It feels weird.
Yeah.
I had an idea for a ritual that I'm temporarily calling Grizzly Confidant, and it's a way to magically preserve a severed head, and it can only relay information that it had while it was alive, and depending on how well you perform the ritual, it will give you a number of questions that it will answer before it explodes.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
But I don't think the explosion does damage. I think it's just gross. It's like scanners.
You just have to get those questions.
Yeah. I think you perform the ritual, and you know that you did it well, but your characters don't know how many questions they get. You know, I mean, you as a player probably would know because there'll be a chart, you know, mm-hmm. but I think maybe the GM tracks how many questions they've asked, and then you ask it one, like it doesn't explode until you ask it one more, and it's like, okay, so how do we go this? And it's just, it doesn't answer, it just explodes, and you're covered in gore. But I don't know what the ritual is. Like, I know that that's the effect you want, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Obviously you need a freshly severed head,
or you got to decapitate it. Mm-hmm. You would have to decapitate it yourself, right?
I don't know.
To do,
because I think you might come across a freshly murdered body and you're chasing a murderer.
That's true.
You don't know what they look like.
Yeah.
And I mean, well, in that case, you're probably going to decapitate the head yourself, but mm-hmm. but you know, somebody was executed and they chopped and their head was chopped off, you could probably steal the head and then do the thing.
Someone with a tongue.
Yeah, maybe.
The mouth. It would be centered around the mouth.
Or the ears. Maybe the mouth, ears, and eyes, right? So
just what you're trying to get the information.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to do something with the mouth, ears, and eyes. You have to stuff them with something or, and then, you know, cast the spell, right? Mm-hmm. I think a severed head is component enough. That's mm-hmm. that's difficult to obtain, generally.
And let's say it lasts for three questions. If you ask it one question and just keep it, uh-huh. like 2 days later, can you ask it another question?
Yeah, I think so. I think it lasts indefinitely.
Until the questions are asked?
Right, but I think it'll respond to anyone.
Oh, so.
Right, so you got to keep it away from people. If they're like, what the hell is this? He's like, I am this and this and this. You're like, fuck, you choose one of the questions, you idiot.
You open your bag and it's just gore and blood. Like, who asked a question?
I think you have to address it. You don't have to know the name of the head. Because you could, well, that would be a cool plot point. You discover one. You know, it's been preserved for hundreds of years.
It's just laying there.
Yeah.
And you have no idea if it's got one more question, if it doesn't. Yeah.
You go, who are you? And it just explodes. Like, fuck. Yeah, so I think maybe mm-hmm. you have to seal the ears and the eyes with wax, like you have to close them up, and the neck hole, like you have to close all that with wax, maybe.
Wax and herbs and...
Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool.
That could be fun. I feel like it should be difficult, too. Yeah. It's a difficult ritual.
But so useful, and hopefully you got the right...
Yeah.
The right head.
That's brutal. Oh, imagine the murder trials. Like, we brought the head out. Mm-hmm. They told me to cast the spell very well. We've asked it no questions yet. It's like, we'll see this. Who murdered you? And it just explodes. You're like, God damn it. Yeah, we need a better wizard.
Maybe you would have to give it like a rune name to address it.
Oh, yeah, you have to. Well.
Because that way it would activate with the name.
You have to know their name.
Yeah.
So you have to address it, you have to ask it its name. So you could find ahead and not know the name, and then you're searching for whose name it is.
If you don't want to ask it one question.
Like, what do you mean?
The first question could be, what's your name?
You know? Yeah, exactly. But you have to address it by it. Maybe you have to address it by its name. It's like a Simon Says. You have to say its name and then ask your question.
Okay. Yeah, so the quest would be find the name of this head.
Mm-hmm.
Search its pockets.
Yeah, most of its pockets are left with the body, you know. Okay, that I like that.
That's super cool.
What do they call it? Grizzly Confidant?
Yeah.
I almost think like witness should be in there somewhere.
Dead man's tongue or something. Murder trails, like you said. Bringing out the heads.
We were lucky enough to recover them quickly enough. Like, what's the timeline? How quickly do you have to recover the head? I think an hour.
Yeah. But that could give rise to, like, in the city, if you're going to murder someone, you fuck up that head.
Yeah.
If you know the city has a wizard, like, capable of doing this.
Yeah. Well, I think also, let's make that a rare one. Anything necromantic, right? Yeah. It's got to be real rare. And if you show up with one, like, people automatically assume you killed it because the window is so small to recover the head.
So if there's like a murdered politician or something, then
that would be a big deal. Mm-hmm. If a politician was murdered and his head is missing, people are going to freak out.
Yeah.
That's a plot point in itself because
secrets.
Yeah.
Recover the head.
Yeah, he's got this guy. He's the Jay Leno of it's like this guy's the Jay Leno. He's buried everybody's bodies. How does he keep getting work? Well, we're gonna find out.
Yeah,
somebody's gonna find out.
Somebody's got his head.
A whole province could just fall into ruin just because a head is missing.
Yep.
Because people spin out and go crazy because they're so worried.
Everyone's worried about their secret. They have no idea what secrets is gonna be revealed, but it could be mine.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, I like that. I feel like that's fun. Well, I'll do Grizzly Confidant right now, and we can come up with. I think witness maybe should be in there, but we'll worry about that later. Okay, but
that thing makes me think of like a hand to point the way.
Oh yeah,
you know, you just have somebody's hand hang from your neck, and it's like pointing with his finger at a crossroads.
Let's table that one for next time. I like that idea too. All right, well, that's going to be it for us today, guys. I want to thank Max for coming out.
Yeah.
As always, if you want to play this game that we're building, check us out on our Patreon at patreon.com/RPGFS. We're making rule books. We post them there. At every tier, we've got something for you. I'm about to release a lot more Cutting Room Floor clips and working on a new design for the upcoming rule book, something that'll be easier to update than its current design. And we're almost ready to launch the second chapter of our Echoes of the Star Crypt campaign with a whole host of new characters created by you, the listeners, at the $10 tier of our Patreon.
You can find us on facebook.com/RPGFS.
And we're on Twitter. We are at Homebrew Hombres.
You can find us on Instagram at RPG from Scratch. That's all one word.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.